Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture, and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Conservative, constitutional. It's the Andrew Cooper Writer Show, keeping you informed on what's going on right here in Kentucky.
Today on the Andrew Cooper Writer Show, we see how desperate and pathetic Kentucky State Senate leadership is getting to make sure that everyone stays in line and to exert their power, as we see not only one, but two examples in two different state Senate primaries on the Republican side, where Republicans' state Senate leadership is showing everything that is wrong with politics right now in Kentucky, and it's nasty, it's dishonest, and quite literally just absolutely disgusting behavior. Finally, recently on social media, we've been hearing an argument from feminists about whether they'd rather be stuck in the forest with a bear or a man, and a lot of them are picking the bear because they say it's safer than a man, as if a man would ever want to be stuck in the woods with most of these women. Now, normally I spend most of my time talking about Kentucky politics, but I wanted to weigh in on this social issue taking the nation by storm. Because honestly, I'd like to weigh in on this question, as this has actually been a common debate around the campfire with me and hunting buddies on several hunting trips I've had over the last year, but for completely different reasons, I think, about whether bears or humans were more worried about in the woods. And I'll tell the animal nobody's talking about as the one you'd rather least be alone with in the forest, and it's not bear or human. So I'll have all that and more today on the Andrew Cooper Writer Show. But first, we had a listener question from Anne. Now, if you want your question answered on air, be sure to reach out to the Andrew Cooper Writer Show. You can email info@theandrewshow.com. Once again, that's info@theandrewshow.com, or head on over to theandrewshow.com, click the contact tab, and I fill out a contact form, and I'll be happy to answer your question on the air if it so deserves to be. And Anne says, "Hi, Andrew. Sorry for writing you so much." No problem, Anne. You can write me as much as you'd like to. Can't say I'll respond to everyone, but write me as much as you want. "I just received a $60 fee for my 2013 Avalon Hybrid for an EV tax from House Bill 360. Why they lumped hybrids into this, I have no idea. Clearly, no one did any research. My car battery only kicks in at full or near stop. That's all. I have the same gasoline bill as everyone else. So I'm paying the gas taxes and now being punished for having a fuel-efficient vehicle. We have a Republican supermajority. I don't think so. I'm personally worse off with them lording over me. I'm so angry right now. I'm going to do something I've never done before. I'm voting Democrat at the state level. At least Dems don't hide behind a facade. If I have time, I'll cover something else she mentioned in the email, but I wanted to deal with this as it's a little more kind of state political specific." So an interesting point here. So she had two points in there, one about the gas tax, one about voting for Dems versus Republicans. I'll visit both those. But first, let's talk about the gas tax. And this is an interesting point she's making about hybrid vehicles and taxation, how that works. It's one I've touched on the show before, but it's been a little while. We've gone through the math on what the tax and how much it should be, or hybrids and electrics and so on and so forth. Let me first lay out some history with you all. What's this coming from? And you got to understand how our gas tax works. So gas tax, our road fund, quote unquote, is a fund that is supposed to only be used for taking care of infrastructure in Kentucky. It's the same way at the federal level, too, that they both have a road fund that is supposed to only go towards taking care of the roads. And that road fund at both federal and state level is primarily driven by a gasoline tax. And the tax is determined based on a percentage of wholesale price, but it does have a minimum. I believe here in Kentucky, the minimum is, what, about 24 cents or so? Probably should double check before I logged in. I know it's in the 20th cents because it's like 21 to 24 cents. It's somewhere in there. And so there's a minimum tax as well, but when it goes above a certain wholesale price, then that would go up with it because the tax gets stacked on. So right now, let's say you're paying $3.50 a gallon for gas at the pump. Honestly, about 50 to 60-ish cents of that is federal and state taxes on your gasoline. And that money is to go into a pot called the road funds and then only supposed to be dispersed out for the taking care of the roads. Now, a chunk of the state road fund that that gasoline tax pays for does end up going to KSP, specifically the Highway Patrol, to pay for their enforcement of traffic laws on the road. That's kind of how it's justified, right, wrong, or indifferent. But it is a fairly good chunk, about $60 million or so was how much it was last year. I don't know exactly how much they budgeted for it this coming up year, but it's a good chunk of money. I believe it's about $80 million they budgeted out of the road fund for this upcoming year. But anyways, don't take, you know, gospel truth for it, but it's a good. It's tens of millions of dollars. It's a good chunk. And some of that goes to some other places too as well, but most of it mainly is applied to the road fund. And there was talk over, quote unquote, modernizing the road fund. That's anytime you start hearing politicians throw around words like modernizing the road fund or modernizing any kind of tax, it should show up a lot of red flags for you. You should throw them up real quick because it is they're attempting to increase your taxes. And what happened, they said they need to modernize for, is that you had more high-mileage vehicles, hybrids, and electric vehicles coming along using the roads, creating, quote-unquote, damage on the roads, but not paying their, and this is their words, fair share of the road fund. Basically that, you know, a hybrid car, an electric car, weighs the same or more than something like a standard Toyota Camry, but yet, you know, a hybrid Toyota Camry gets 50 miles to the gallon, while a normal Toyota Camry maybe gets 30 miles to the gallon, and so pays near half the amount of tax, but they're both doing the same amount of damage to the road, and so the road fund didn't have enough funds in it because you had more cars driving on it, but they were paying less overall in the gas tax per vehicle. That was the argument here. And you know, there's been some attempts in the past, there were some attempts to increase, to add on a electric vehicle tax and hybrid tax, but also to increase our gas tax at the same time. And they were trying to justify that by saying everybody should pay their fair share. But after those who had pushed heavily for this increase in gas tax, not only did it not succeed, but a few of them got taken out in primaries. And one of the attacks against them was sponsoring gas taxes, increasing taxes. That whole push to be able to do the electric vehicle tax and hybrid tax along with increasing the gas tax in one bill kind of fell away. And instead, what we saw was they passed a bill where they would just simply charge a tax on electric vehicles. And hybrid vehicles would get an additional amount of money charged at hybrids less than electric. And the idea was to kind of make up the difference. But they also put a tax on per kilowatt of electricity that was dispensed out at, you know, these charging stations. Now, obviously, people charge at home mainly, so, you know, you won't capture it all. And we kind of broke down some of the math at the time. We're talking about, you know, how much would equal out to the same as a regular car and everything else. And you know, how that would be, you know, if we wanted to be fair in taxing. But, you know, anytime we're dealing with taxation in the government, we're running into an issue. That government is seeking to solve this problem of high mileage hybrid electric vehicles. They want to solve it. But these resolutions, any resolution that comes from government, will deal with government making more money. And that leads to some questions and considerations. some principles, some philosophy arguments here, and some honest questions like, do you honestly believe if the government brings in more money to the road fund, suddenly that pothole down the street will be filled? Is that fair? Is paying your fair share? Is that like a real argument we should be honoring? Well, we'll have a little bit more discussion on this after this short break. You listen to the Andrew Cooperator Show, your source for Kentucky politics.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's Ollie.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
And you're back with the Andrew Cooperator Show. I've been answering a viewer question from an Ann regarding the electric vehicle tax. The argument here is that electric and hybrid vehicles use the roads the same amount as a gas vehicle of the same weight, but where they are higher mileage vehicles or not buying fuel at all, they're paying less in road fund. And of course, the gas tax goes into the road fund, and that's used to take care of the roads. I think we need to pause here and have a discussion about fair share taxation and everything else. Does anybody out there who's listening to this right now think anyone, I mean, honestly, do you think there's any American who doesn't pay more than enough in taxes? I mean, I know you got like liberals and communists out there that will say the millionaires and billionaires need to pay more, but those are people who have honestly envy problems. Because if we talk about something like percentages, everybody just pays 30%, you would think that would be a fair tax. Everybody just pays a flat percentage that remains the same. Or, you know, personally, I find income tax to be extremely immoral. So maybe just a sales tax, and then, you know, rich people buy more things, they would pay more in sales tax end up because they're buying more. And poor people obviously wouldn't buy as many non-necessity items, the kinds of things that are sales tax, and so they would pay less. But putting that to the side, I just ask those people who say that rich people should just pay more, what principle is that based on? What, you pay more because you make more? You just think I can spare it more than you can, so therefore I should pay more money? I mean, what right do other people have to someone else's money? Sometimes you'll hear people claim that, well, they make money off their businesses and pull in tax services, and their businesses only make money because of the things that we, the rest of the taxpayers, are funding. And while granted, there are plenty of situations that I can point to, things like giving billions of dollars to Ford to build electric vehicle plants and so on and so forth, and bailouts and all kinds of corporate welfare that maybe lead to the fact they only exist because of the taxpayer. I could see that. But when we're talking about our standard business owner, when you're talking about most of your millionaires and a fair amount of your billionaires, these are simple business owners. But most of your millionaires are people who've just built businesses with their own two hands. And they've worked very hard to get to where they're at. The vast majority of millionaires fall into that category. I mean, the easiest ways to build wealth is by owning a business or by owning property. And so, you know, when you say that, well, you didn't build that, that was something we heard during Obama said to business owners and to millionaires and billionaires that made their money off businesses. He said, you didn't build that, talking about how somehow the government and the taxpayer, no matter who you are, helped you build your business. Now, these statements are coming from a place of ignorance. I mean, not only do businesses themselves pay a lot of taxes, including, you know, semi-trucks pay a higher tax for road usage, since we're on that topic, than a standard user does. Businesses pay a profitability tax to many places, including local, state, county, federal, before they ever pay the owners or CEOs of those companies. businesses pay payroll taxes. They're about the same as every single employee. So when you look at your paycheck and you see how much you're paying in payroll taxes, your employer is matching that a lot of times. On the other side, they pay workers' comp. They pay, you know, unemployment insurance. You know, they pay a lot of additional taxes. I mean, take for example, you know, a lot of you know I owned restaurants. And in Lexington, you pay things like a grease trap tax, an alarm tax. You know, the list goes on and on. I mean, businesses pay a lot more taxes before the people in the business ever get paid. So claim that a business is just willy-nilly using up resources and not contributing to the tax base in the country and community, and they're using more than they take in somehow right now, and millionaires and billionaires, is absolutely ridiculous. And we know this intrinsically. We know how important it is to attract these high-income earners, but also their businesses to an area, because let's think about what politicians run on. They run on, we're creating jobs. We run on increased incomes. They run on these types of things. And when they're running on these types of things, they're not saying these are bad things because they're using up our tax dollars. They're not contributing. The belief that they're pushing forward is that it's good these people are coming into the area. It's good that they're bringing jobs and their businesses, because that is increasing our tax revenues, not decreasing our net taxes. So even if you're somehow misguided and think that someone out there is somehow overtaxed, you know, and I mean, I got to ask you, do you honestly believe that, or is that just something you feel like saying? I mean, it's like you're saying that, you know, imagine you're getting crushed to death under stones. I mean, this is what it sounds like when people are like, that guy's not paying his fair share of taxes right now. I mean, this is what I imagine. You're getting crushed to death under stones. You get a piece of wood on your back and you're getting crushed to death. With each stone, you're getting closer and closer to dying. And the guy next to you is also getting crushed to death. But they have one less stone on their back than you do. And instead of asking the person who's crushing the stones on top of you to remove the stones, you're listening to them tell you, hey, while I'm throwing stones on your back, look, that guy has one less stone than you. Don't you want to throw another stone on him? Come on. Don't vote to remove stones off both of your backs. Instead, you should vote to make him have more stones and we'll leave the same amount on you. Because, I mean, it's just, do you really think the government, if they get more money in, they're somehow going to fix your roads? I mean, you think what, a few $100 off every EV and suddenly the potholes are getting filled? That shoulder's getting built you've always wanted done? Come on, paying your fair share? I get it. People who drive Priuses you don't like, and sometimes I don't like them either. I know cool people that drive Priuses, but some people drive Priuses and, you know, they're hard to stand. They're kind of smug. South Park did an episode about that. They're pretty smug. But they're still just getting crusted death under taxes just like you are. So, but if we put all that to the side, if we put all of this consideration to the side and pretend that one second that government, for some reason, does need more money from certain people and our road funding needs fixed because the government is just so efficient and running so well, it needs more money from us. And all the best way to do this is we've got to clearly increase taxes on those EVs and hybrids and everything else. And it hits on an important point. I don't want to be punished for having higher vehicle efficiency. I don't want that to go into consideration. And you don't want to mess with the free market too much. And I think the best way to do this would be to tax a vehicle based upon weight. Then EVs that damage the road just the same as standard vehicles that damage the road are all paying in. Of course, that makes it harder to capture people as they drive through the area. But then in that case, the federal government should just tax by weight too as well. Stop taxing off the gas tax. And then that pot of money gets handed out based upon mileage, the amount of miles of roads that federal roads each state has going through them to be able to handle that process. There's a better ways to do this than taxing gas and taxing based upon whether you have a battery or not. And I think that would be on weight. Now the Biden administration attempted to fix this fair share problem by putting a mileage tracker on your car because, you know, that sounds like a safe thing. But the point is though, We're all paying too much in taxes to begin with. And does the government really need more of our money, regardless of their stated reason? I think not. Now, on to the state Senate leadership. Just absolute, just disgusting behavior. And you know, I know some of you may remember I ran for state Senate in 2022. I took about 45% of the vote. And one of the big reasons I lost was I was outspent 5-1. And in fact, I actually currently, though it may change after this session, we'll see what happens, I still hold the record for the most amount ever spent in a Senate primary with just two candidates and being spent the most against by far, because they spent hundreds of thousands, you know, nearly half a million, if not over half a million dollars against me in that election. And the biggest spender by far in that was the Senate Republican Caucus Campaign Committee, also known as the SRCCC. Now, let me explain what the SRCC is and why it's so incredibly important. So the SRCCC is kind of like, we'll call it the Senate Leadership Pack. So there's the SDCCC, the Senate Democrat Caucus Campaign Committee, the Republican House Republican Caucus Campaign Committee, the Democrat the House Democrat Caucus Campaign Committee. So there's four of these types of campaign committees, and they are set up to protect, quote unquote, the caucus. So when I talk about the caucus, I'm talking about the Republican caucus in this case. And they're interesting instruments for a few reasons. One is they a little bit higher amounts of money you can give to them than you can a standard PAC. But what's most interesting about the SRCCCs and the other caucus campaign committees is that they're allowed to coordinate with candidates. You see, there's only two types of financial instruments that can coordinate with campaigns while spending money on those campaigns. That is the parties, so the Republican Party, the Democrat parties, or caucus campaign committees. Otherwise, if you're a PAC, you can spend as much as you want on a candidate, but you're not allowed to coordinate that spending with the candidate. Basically, they can't know what you're doing. They can't weigh in on it. It's considered just your free speech. But the SRCCC, in this case, that's what we're talking about, Senate Republican Caucus Campaign Committee, is allowed to coordinate these funds with the Republican candidate, well, any candidate that they're working with. And these instruments, these financial instruments, when you look at Senate leadership, so like Senate President Stivers, Senate President Pro Tem David Givens, caucus leader, Julie Rocky Adams, Majority Floor Leader Thayer, and I believe the whip is Senator Wilson. And so when you look at that leadership, they are in control of that pot of money the SRCC is in charge of, and they use that as their carrot and stick to get people to vote the way they want to. When you talk about, well, leadership doesn't want that, or leadership has control, people ask, how does leadership in the House, in the Senate, how do they get control? What is the instrument they're using? They're using this caucus campaign committee. And I think they're out over their skis in this campaign. We'll go over exactly why after this short break. You're listening to The Andrew Cooperwriter Show, your source for Kentucky politics.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
And you are back with the Andrew Cooperwriter Show. For the break, we're digging into the Senate Republican Caucus Campaign Committee's actions during this primary. I went over how this is a tool of leadership in the Senate used to kind of maintain power, but the SRCCC has done two things so far this primary rotation, this primary so far this year, that should leave a lot of members of the caucus pretty unhappy and very uncomfortable, as well as every single Republican voter. And this goes into also one of the listener questions I had earlier on. I'll wrap back around to that. Didn't forget about that. But anyway, so the SRCCC, the Senate Republican Caucus Campaign Committee, I already explained what that was in the last segment. If you missed it, you'll have to head on over to theandrewshow.com and hit listen now. But spending in primaries on their side of things is already a little bit controversial. Not a lot, not super controversial, but a little bit. It makes a lot of members of, you know, state Republican leadership that I know of have been a little bit uncomfortable with somewhat of what they're doing. Because, you know, within the party, within the state party, especially publicly, they feel very uncomfortable about taking sides in primaries. Because they never know how a primary is going to turn out. You never know which side you end up working with. And they're invested in trying to keep the party as united as possible. That is their goal. We all have our own goals. Their goal, a lot of times within the Republican party apparatus side of things, is to keep people as united as possible and pushing in the same direction as much as possible. So getting involved in primaries is kind of risky business if that's what you're going to do. Because, you know, when the SRCCC, for example, getting involved in the primaries being risky for them is because, okay, let's imagine you spend a couple hundred thousand against a candidate and then they win. And it's not exactly like, take my situation when I was running for state senate. I didn't lose by like a lot. You know, it was a little bit closer than most people would have expected, especially with the fact of how they spent, you know, near $500,000, if not more, dollars against me. But you spend that kind of money organizing against somebody and then they win anyways. Well, now you got to work with them. And how are you supposed to work with somebody in good faith that spent so much time, money, and effort trying for you not to win? That's why getting involved in primaries by them is already very, very risky. And so the way the Senate Republican Caucus Campaign Committee could continue to reward those who vote the way they want them to and not reward and not give money to and make it harder on those who don't is that, you know, in general, you give money to the candidates you like. You don't give money to the caucus members you think haven't earned it by listening to you enough. You give money before the primary season directly to the candidates, but yourself don't pay for it. Maybe at the end of every session, you reward members of the caucus based upon how well they voted for you, and leadership sits around, decides who deserves the most money by listening to you. This is all very gross and disgusting, but it's ways to do this without getting involved in primaries and showing your hands so much and creating so much wedges. Cause you can always claim, well, you know, like they did in my primary, they tried to claim, well, you know, we always support the incumbents and that's why we got so involved. That doesn't explain why they spent hundreds of thousands of dollars, but it's at least something they could claim. But they're running into some problems as we talk about how they've kind of crossed the Rubicon on two issues here. And I think these two things in particular are absolutely politically disgusting and should make every voter and, you know, every senator not in leadership uneasy and unhappy, every Republican voter and Republican senator at least. So what have they done? Well, first, something I find particularly politically disgusting was an attack mailer the SRCCC sent out against Lynn Beckler in Senate District 1. Now, the current office holder in that Senate district is Jason Howell, who is not super great, doesn't have a super great voting record or history. Now, Lynn Beckler is challenging him. Now, Lynn Beckler was a state House rep, but he was too conservative for House leadership. They didn't like him. They didn't like how much of a problem he caused them. So what they did was, when redistricting happened in 2022 elections, they redistrict Lynn Beckler into Representative Gooch's House district and got rid of Lynn Beckler's district and moved it away from him, putting what is two Republican House incumbents against each other. But most of the district was Gooch's old district, leaving Lynn Beckler with a huge disadvantage. Despite this, Lynn still did okay and only fell 450 votes shy of winning. So Lynn is now running against Jason Howell in this Senate primary, and the SRCCC sent out a mailer against Lynn Beckler that is particularly egregious. It said, It says Biden's inflation, Beckler's taxes. Despite Joe Biden's runaway inflation, Lynn Beckler voted with radical liberals in Frankfurt to raise Kentuckians' taxes by over $50 million. And then they cite as their source 2020 House Bill 351. Now, immediately, anytime you hear a claim like that, your antenna should go up, where they claim that a Republican voted with liberal Democrats on a bill to raise taxes. The minute you hear that, and that it passed to, should, like, immediately, you should be like, whoa, 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 here. Because this was in 2020, when Republicans had control of both the House and Senate. So how would a taxation bill that was liberal-backed get a vote in Frankfurt in 2020, let alone pass? Well, because it wasn't a liberal-backed tax bill. In fact, the sponsor, and the only sponsor on the bill, was a member of Republican House leadership, Stephen Rudy. And it was a bill to raise taxes on tobacco. Now, is it a good thing or a bad thing? Probably bad. I mean, anytime you're raising taxes, that's not exactly a good thing. But for the SRCCC, the Senate Republican Caucus Campaign Committee, or the Senate leadership to hit Beckler on this is particularly egregious. Why? Because Thayer, Stivers, Julie Rackey Adams, David Givens, Wilson, every member of Senate leadership voted for this same bill. Not once, but twice. They voted for it too. So the people who authorized and decided to send this mailer attacking Beckler for that vote voted the same way. And it was clearly a priority bill of leadership because a member of leadership in the House was the sponsor. So what does this say to the rest of the caucus in the Senate, the rest of the Republican caucus? It says even when you vote with them and for bills they vote for, they're not above attacking you for it and are willing to. I mean, does this put them out over their skis here? Are they overreaching themselves? Because a caucus member might say, well, you know, they're just doing anything they need to protect current office holders. So, you know, yeah, they're attacking somebody for voting the same way as they did on a bill. And yeah, that's kind of egregious and odd, but, you know, they're just doing whatever they need to protect current office holders. And I appreciate that. Sure. They're demonstrating how I can be easily attacked and called liberal for voting with them, but I'm okay because I'm an incumbent. But that leads us now onto our second move by this Republican leadership, by Senate leadership that they did that would actually argue against that. And for that move, we need to move over to Senate District 7. Which has incumbent Adrian Southworth. Now, a little background on the race. Not only did they redistrict Adrian Southworth to set her up for this primary because they disliked her, but they didn't stop there. The Senate Republican Caucus Campaign Committee has gone on now to send out a mailer, not for Adrian Southworth, the incumbent, who, by the way, is supported by other current caucus members, but send out a mailer to support the challenger, one of the challengers. So that points to a question about, are we trying to keep this caucus together or not? And that also should leave some other incumbents questioning about how safe are they really? How safe are you if they're going to go after an incumbent? So just because you think you're incumbent, you're not safe, and you say, well, I'll vote with them, so at least they can't attack me for voting the same way that they did. Well, wrong. Lynn Beckler found himself on the end of a mailer where they voted the way leadership wanted him to, where he did what they wanted him to. But he's pushed it too far. He's too out of their graces, so they're going to go after him from that. Well, we'll be digging a little bit more into this, a few more points on this after this short break, and then I'll also be going over to humans or bears. What are you safer with in the woods? Stupid question, but the feminists are asking. We'll have that after this short break. And you're back in this final segment on a wonderful Monday here on the Andrew Cooper Writer Show. Before the break, I was going into some things of Senate Republican Caucus Campaign Committee, Republican Caucus Campaign Committee, and leadership have done in this primary season that should make everyone uncomfortable. I mean, really egregious stuff. Attacking you know, people for voting the same way they did on bills. Not supporting the incumbents, or at least just staying out of races against incumbents, but instead in primaries supporting people challenging incumbents. This isn't exactly how you keep, you know, a caucus together. I mean, if you're incumbent, you're not safe. You vote with them, you're not safe. So the question becomes, if you're current and elected sitting member of the Senate, what exactly is your incentive here for keeping this current Senate Republican leadership in place? I mean, you have an occurrence in 2022. This throws a cherry on top where they redistricted me into a race against an incumbent to clear the way for a non-incumbent to have a clear path, Amanda Bledsoe, where she ended up not challenging a primary, even though we were running against each other initially, and then they redistricted me. Then to have to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on that race to keep me out. Now you have them attacking people for voting for a bill they also voted for. Then you have them attacking now even sitting members of the caucus, putting current members of the caucus at risk, attacking people for voting with them, attacking current members of the caucus in primaries directly, blowing through huge wads of money on races that they're creating and situations they created. Not to mention what they did on important signature issues like Senate Bill 6, the DEI bill, that was supposed to be something they said was a priority for them that ended up dead because friends of leadership, Aaron Thompson, head of the Kentucky Council on Post-Secondary Education, said he didn't like the bill, so it was killed, something the caucus wanted done, but leadership didn't. So add not being able to accomplish even basic conservative things if they go against what leadership's friends wants to the list. I mean, this is an awful, egregious, disgusting, the nastiest things, the grossest things about politics, the kinds of things that voters are fed up with, and you should really be asking yourself, if you're a current member of Senate, aren't you fed up with it? Do you really want to have to constantly brown nose and be a yes man or woman, lest you be attacked by the same caucus you helped raise money for? That you sacrificed principles and took votes maybe you weren't super comfortable with because they promised they would have your back and it would help them raise money into the Senate Republican Caucus Campaign Committee and they'd be there to support you, and then they turn around and are using that money to blow it on races they've set up to attack people for voting the same way they did, for attacking current incumbents. A caucus that steadily sold out Kentuckians to drive more money into their accounts on a premise it'd be used to help keep incumbents in power. But instead, all they've shown you is they can't make a decision. They can't protect your funds if you're a member of Senate but not a member of leadership. They are nowhere near loyal to the caucus or to you, what they're supposed to be leading. So at what point do you remove them? And when do we as voters start asking our senators the hard questions like, why do you keep voting for this backstabbing swamp monsters who have no guiding principle other than their own personal raw power and the desire to grow it? When do we demand they be removed? If we don't, we'll expect to keep getting the same thing. And that goes to my viewer question from Ann asking about or talking about voting for a Democrat. Now, one thing I'll say, when it comes to things like talking about raising taxes and everything else, when it comes to a Democrat, that is a feature. They consider it a reason to vote for them, that they'll raise the taxes. For Republicans, it's a bug. And you got to keep that in mind. But I think also when you're taking votes as a voter, and if you're an incredibly informed voter, you need to be as tactful as possible. Now, I'd never tell you to vote for Democrats, but I think there's plenty of situations where maybe it's not great to vote for anybody. Because you don't want to endorse anybody in that race with your vote. You know, if it's a close chamber like we have going on in the federal House or in the Senate, I can understand an argument to say, look, I got to vote for the Republican. I may not like that specific Republican, but it gets Republican leadership in power. And that now gives other Republicans chances to be on House committees and chairs. Like, for an example, voting for a Republican congressman like Andy Barr when he's up against a Democrat, you may not like Andy Barr, but by voting for him, you can get somebody like Thomas Massie to stay on the Rules Committee. That's something worthwhile to do because Thomas Massie, if Republicans aren't in control, Thomas Massie's maybe not on the Rules Committee, or Comer isn't the chair of a committee if you like Comer, or maybe you don't like Comer, or Jim Jordan's isn't the chair of a committee if you like him, or whoever. But when we have 80% of the seats like we do in our state legislature, you start wondering and saying, do we need to send a clear message that we need to be more Republican? Now, it can backfire on you because, notoriously speaking, the establishment is awful at reading the room and realizing that they're they're losing ground because they're not conservative enough, not because they're not Democrat enough. But moving off electoral politics, moving off Kentucky politics for a second, I don't often do this. There is something going around on the social medias about bears and men. So the feminists out there are claiming, they were asked the question, would you rather be alone in the woods with a bear or with a human? And the premise of this question is that this is the feminist, men rape women and sexually assault them and attack them and send them unsolicited photos and will ask them to dinner and show them attention and blah, 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 blah. And a bear doesn't do those things. Now, of course, a bear could maul you and attack you, but I guess they're saying that a bear doesn't always attack you, but a man will always send you an unsolicited photo or something, or always catcall you or whistle you. And I've seen some of the women posting these, and I don't think every man out there is catcalling them. Trust me, right? And I think that's like the nature of something that they don't understand when it comes to bears, like the nature of a bear. And I know this is so stupid. It's a stupid discussion, but of course it shows how stupid our culture has become that this is an actual discussion we need to have. That, you know, a hungry bear will behave the same way regardless. And it brings up questions about, like, what are the chances a man murders you versus a bear, you know, mauling you, right? And it would depend on how hungry the bear is or if you're near the cubs, but you follow my discussion here. It's kind of ridiculous, but of course the feminists are choosing the bears to make a point about how dangerous men are and blah, blah, blah. Now, what's funny to me about this discussion is I actually have had this conversation recently, but before the feminists started doing this. Why? Because, well, I was on an opening week camping trip for turkey season this year. And where we camped at, it was kind of a primitive site, but it was kind of closer to other humans, kind of farther away. And we had set up camp. And anybody who knows me well knows one of my greatest fears when it comes to camping, we were in Eastern Kentucky, is that a bear will just come rolling through my tent and just kill me. That's just like a fear I have. You can call me dumb for having it, and I don't care. I've learned it's not my greatest fear in the woods. I'll get to what it is, but I'm not afraid as much of a bear when, like, I'm awake, especially when I'm hunting, because I've got, like, a gun, and I'm awake. So I feel like I could definitely take the bear with a gun and being awake, but I'm worried, like, at night, the bear will come in and maul me, and it's very difficult for me to sleep at night sometimes when I'm camping, too. You know, one time I went out, not to get too into it, but one time I went out to Colorado elk hunting. I was relatively awoken by every single twig or snap. Meanwhile, my dad just wasn't woken by anything. I mean, at one night, we literally had a herd of mule deer in the middle of our camp. I'm not kidding. I went out to use the bathroom, obviously bringing my 45 long Colt revolver with me, just in case, you know, I was using the bathroom, something tried to attack me. And literally, I shined my flashlight, and I was surrounded by mule deer. I was worried it was bears, turned out just to be a herd of mule deer, but bears mauling me in my sleep is like a real thing I'm afraid of. I don't care if it's, you know, reasonable or not. But anyways, so here recently, I was camping in Eastern Kentucky, and we were kind of away from humans, but still kind of close, and I was pretty comfortable still with the habitat. But then another guy had come into camp and a site a few sites down, and I turned to my hunting buddy and I said, oh, good, another human. I feel more comfortable because the bears are less likely to attack us now. Maybe they'll attack that guy. And my hunting buddy said, actually, I'm more afraid of the man, you know, coming in, robbing us or things like that than I am of a bear. And that began a discussion. Are we more afraid of a man or a bear when we're camping? And that was an interesting conversation and a worthwhile one, by the way. I mean, these are the kinds of things you need to discuss. We need the greatest minds. We need Socrates and Sun Tzu and every philosophical thinker we can weighing in on bears or men. What's more of a danger to you when you're camping? That is the question for the ages. However, the feminists have taken it to a dumb level, where we start bringing in concerns that are just ridiculous and attributing things to all people that I don't think you could attribute to it. But also, there's something you should be way more afraid of in the woods, and I discovered this on Saturday, and that is skunk. I'm sitting out kind of against a fence row waiting for some turkeys come in for turkey season, and I start hearing some rustling off to the side, and I look left, and about 10 yards away from me is a skunk. And I've never been more afraid in my life. Now, luckily, it did not spray me. I did not freak out too much at it. We clucked at it to let them know we were there. Like, you know, because we were turkey hunting, we had mouth calls in. Clucked at it. The skunk saw us, realized we were there, and walked away without spraying us. And that should be the real question. What's worse, a bear, a human, or a skunk? And the right answer is a skunk. Well, y'all, that's what I have time for today on the Andrew Cooper Show. We'll see you back here tomorrow.